Well, people, what is happening this week on the podcast? We have the Spartan. We talk all things MMA. Last week on the podcast, you probably heard me mention his story. We talk about his career. We talk about fighting for one. We talk about what needs to change for MMA fighters. We talk about the pay that they get. We talk about the drugs and sport in the sport. We talk about a whole lot of things. We don't just talk about his career. We talk about everything. And it's a real great podcast. And I think you're going to get a real insight on what it's like being a professional MMA fighter. And hopefully you all enjoy. Let me know what you think in the comments. And make sure you're following me on social media. You can find me at Josh Talks on Instagram and Facebook. And make sure you leave me a good review on Apple Podcasts. Cheers.
Welcome to Josh Talks.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, brother, how are you, my man?
I'm doing very, very well. It was a bit of a rocky start, but we got through it. We got there in the end.
We got there in the end. That's all that matters.
So I've got a question for you. How do you know Alan Philpott?
Funny story. Me and Alan, we met nearly about at least five, 6 years ago now in Liverpool. I moved out there to live for a bit. I was training at Aspire MMA with Dean Garner, Aaron Roberts, and all those sort of boys. And yeah, and then Alan came for a camp, and yeah, we became friends. And then he ended up moving to Australia. We just always stayed like in close contact. And yeah, now he's a really good friend of mine. And yeah, we often talk, and he's sort of a bit of a, you'd say a bit of a mentor to me. You know, he's helped me sort of through my journey in MMA, so, you know, pointing me in the right direction a lot of the times, and yeah, helped me get to where I sort of am today.
So I have only recently started to get to know Alan. So I don't know if you would have heard of like Rodney Murr.
Rodney, yeah, is that his coach?
Yeah, so that's his coach from Northern Ireland. So me and Alan are both from Northern Ireland. I got Rodney on, and long story short was Rodney says, oh, you should get Alan on your podcast. And I didn't really know much about Alan, but I had him on and it was great. And now me and Alan have just been keeping in contact, and he's just a real good guy. Like he pops up to me the odd time and says, oh, I've got another guest for you here, you need to get this guy on.
Yeah, no, Alan's a good guy, like that's what I mean. He's always sort of a guy to help out, you know, same with me with my career. He sort of pointed me in the right directions a lot of the times. He's always on to me about fighting, staying active, and Alan's just a good guy, man. He's just, you know, he loves the sport, he loves MMA, so yeah.
Maybe you could tell me a wee bit more about this. So I was talking to Alan about it, and I was asking him when his next fight's coming up, and he was telling me at the minute Australia's just very, very bad at the minute for lockdowns, and he's basically, I think from what he was saying is like he would be afraid to leave the country in case he didn't get back in.
Yeah, it's Australia's without going too political, we're in a very weird place in Australia at the moment. And yeah, I mean, for MMA fighters, MMA shows, I mean, in business, life in general in Australia is not the same at the moment. So I feel for people like Alan and that, and you know, these guys were, you know, on local sort of Australian cards, because constantly they're getting knocked back with lockdowns and shutdowns, and yeah, so everyone's cancelling cards, pushing that dates back. And imagine being an MMA fighter and you're getting, you know, 3-4 date pushbacks and cancellations. It's a lot for the fighters, you know. So yeah, Australia's a bit of an odd one at the moment.
How have you found it? Are you able to go back home like when you want to, or is that you in America now?
Nah, man. So I'm currently like in a sense stranded in America at the moment, because Australia is only accepting like one or two flights from Australia a month, and the flights are very, very expensive, and you know, most likely they're going to be cancelled anyway. So currently I'm sort of stuck in the United States, which I honestly don't really have an issue with. Because you know, this is where I do want to transition to America, and yeah, live over here.
So before you were stranded in America, were you just sort of flying back and forth between the two for like camps and stuff?
Yeah, so I've been back and forth from Florida now about six times, I think, maybe more, maybe less than this is short, but yeah, at least a handful of times.
So I know you were training down in Sanford, and I seen your post with Nate. Did you watch his last fight?
Yeah, I was actually lucky enough to be there live and watch his last fight, so it was pretty cool. You talking about Marquardt, yeah? Yeah, so I was lucky enough to be there live. I cornered Devin Dixon in the fight before, a couple of fights before it. So I was there at Titan FC and I cornered Devin, and then I was lucky enough to sit back and watch someone that, funny enough, is I grew up watching Nate as a young sort of MMA fighter, watching him, thinking, wow, who's this guy? He's a beast. He was sick, and didn't really hear much about him after that because in Australia, MMA scene isn't huge. So I was unable to keep up with a lot of guys. I only could sort of see what I could see on the TV every now and again. Usually they're on it late at night. And I just remember him knocking out Tyron Woodley, and I was just like, wow, who's that guy? And then I actually met him in the gym, and he's a super nice guy. And it took me a few weeks to click, and I was like, man, I've seen you before. He's like, oh yeah. I'm like, you're the one that knocked out Tyron Woodley. He's like, yeah. And I was like, wow, man. I remember as a kid, like I'm not as a kid, but as a young MMA fighter, watching you and thinking, wow, who's that guy? He's sick, man. What a knockout. And here you are now. So, we're training partners, we're friends, and it was cool, man. So I was like, yeah, that was pretty surreal.
That was the only fight of the card I got to watch because back home in Northern Ireland, that fight was on at I think 5 a.m.
Yeah, it would have been
So
because
it
we,
was a real late
yeah, it
one.
was late. Yeah.
It was a real late one, but like I thought he looked great.
Yeah, he did. He come out. He looked awesome from the start, like really good. And then he sort of, I'm not sure if he got caught with something or because he sort of slowed up and the guy started getting the better of him. And then bam, with that arm bar, what a comeback! I was like, wow, what a fight! That was a pretty cool fight. So, yeah, no, I was pretty impressed.
So I've obviously watched it before, and then it was like the. I knew he hadn't fought for a couple of years, so I didn't really know what I was expecting. And then he threw like the spinning back kick just straight off the bat.
He's pretty like he's pretty versatile, fit guy still. And in the gym, he's definitely not like you wouldn't, think he's one of the older guys. But he keeps up with everybody else, and he does everything he needs to do. And he's a phenomenal athlete still, at his age. And that's a credit to what a champion is and was.
Yeah, I had him on the podcast now. I think it was a few weeks ago. And he just comes across as a real down to earth good guy.
Yeah, he's honestly a really nice guy, man. He's too friendly for MMA. I think I'm like, how the hell are you an MMA fighter? He's such a nice guy. But hey, man, deep down we're all just nice guys. We just do nasty things sometimes.
See, to be fair, like that's what I've found. See, the majority of people that I've had on this, well, actually, all the people I've had on this podcast. All great people, all really nice people, like all down the earth, lovely people. So I'll talk to you about your career. How did it all begin?
So I started out, like I was saying before, like MMA in Australia was just sort of non-existent, especially MMA. We had things like jiu-jitsu, we had kickboxing, we had boxing, but in terms of straight MMA, mixed martial arts, nah, nothing we had. So I started out as like a just playing like regular Aussie rules football, keeping fit, going to the gym. And then at about 19, just before I turned 20, my brother sort of challenged me to come down and give jiu-jitsu a shot. So I went down, and it was a funny story because he's my older brother and he was doing it for about a year or two before me. And he'd always told me that he could beat me. And me being the little arrogant brother, I was like, nah, no way you can beat me. He's like, I said to him, I bet you $500 you couldn't beat me in a minute. And he goes, nah, I bet you I could. I was like, Sam, there's no way you could beat me in a minute. So I went down the gym. He beat me in about 40 seconds. Then I said to him, being arrogant once again, I was like, nah, go again. I bet you $1,000, double or nothing. You can't do it again. And yeah, he caught me this time I ran away a bit more, kept away. And he finally got me, took me down, and he got me in a head arm choke. And on literally the 59th second, I was about to pass out, so I tapped, and yeah, and he beat me. So I'll give him his money one day, but till then, but that's sort of how I begun. So I started doing jiu-jitsu, and then that same brother, he signed me up for an MMA fight without me knowing, and threw me straight into the deep end. And then yeah, I fought a couple of times, and I really tried. For me as an MMA fighter, it was a long journey because I really didn't want to do it. I didn't want to fight. I was like, no, I don't want to fight. I don't want to be a fighter. You know, I was scared. I'm scared. And then, you know, I just kept doing it, kept winning. And I was like, all right, well, I guess this is the only thing I'm good at. So I might as well just keep doing it.
I'm sure he was definitely sweating it out at that 59-second mark.
Yeah. Literally, I was just about to pass out. I was like, oh, I tapped. And they're like, oh, man, if you tapped, it was 59 seconds. I was like, oh, you're kidding me. So yeah, that's how I started. And then, yeah, I had a few pro boxing fights. I've had 9 MMA fights now, and Hawaii jiu-jitsu stuff. So, yeah.
What about the Aussie rules football? Is that something that you just played the whole way through, or did you mix it with, like, football
now,
and rugby and all that sort of stuff?
So I played like all the ball sports growing up. I played football, or as you would refer to it, as we say in Australia, soccer. I played basketball. Just as always, an active kid, done karate. You know, just my dad kept us very active. We played a lot of music, me and my brothers, a lot of guitars. We still do drums. Yeah, my dad just always kept us a lot active and you know, training us and I guess, you know, in a way that he thought was the best. And yeah, it sort of paid dividends in the long run for all of us.
So what would be your hobbies, like, outside of fighting and training?
I love, at the moment it's a bit hard, but I love to travel. Like, I just literally, man, like, you give me an opportunity to get on a plane, I will fly anywhere, anytime. Like, I love to see the world. I love, you know, I love trying different food. I love trying. That's one thing. Just, you know, to because I've traveled a lot, I've tried so many different foods and cuisines that me as a younger person would have been like, oh, yuck. Or most people still say that when I tell them. I'm like, nah, man, you got to try this. And another thing I love is coffee. I love my coffee. I travel a lot for my coffee. I just love drinking coffee and just, you know, just relaxing, man. Just, I love being around my friends and family. Like, I know a lot of people say that. But yeah, for me, it's probably one of my greatest hobbies is just hanging out with my friends and family. I love them. They're the funniest people I know. So being over here, it's very hard because I miss them so much, and they're such good, funny people. Like, they're the reason why I get out of bed every day and do what I do. But yeah, but that's probably my hobbies.
So what's it like for the time difference between where you're at now in Australia?
Yeah, that's why it's you miss them so much. And I got a girlfriend at home, and you know, I miss her a lot. You know, I can't currently bring her over here because of COVID. She's stuck in Australia without me. So, you know, the time difference is huge. It's 13 and a half hours. So right now in Australia, I'll tell you, give me a second. It is, what's the time? It's 7:09 a.m. in Australia at the moment. So, you know, it's a huge difference. Over the time she gets up and gets ready for work, and you know, we can maybe talk for a couple of hours, and she's got to go to work, and then I got to go to training or go to bed, one of the two. So it's very hard. You know, I only get to speak to, you know, my brothers and my dad maybe, you know, maybe an hour or two a week, and not even maybe 25 minutes a week. My middle brother Sav, he stays up super late, so I get to talk to him a bit. It'll start till 2-3 in the morning. But yeah, the time difference is massive.
Would you ever play like any Xbox or anything with your brothers or?
Nah, not my brother. He used to play a lot of video games, but doesn't play. But I do play a lot of Xbox and PC. Me and Linton Vassell, the heavyweight for Bellator, we live together. And we play all the time on Call of Duty. We get on it. But we're not very good. But yeah, we play. Me and a few of the boys from the gym will jump on together and play. Sometimes my mates from back home will play together, but once again, the time difference is massive. So sometimes it can be hard to get us all on at the same time.
Yeah, Warzone's quality. The only thing that annoys me about it is the cheaters. Oh, I drive
that, yeah, that does suck. But we've been playing Rebirth. It's fun, the Rebirth one. Smaller. It's all Warzone, but you can come back to life. And yeah, it's a lot smaller map. It's fun. So me and Linton play that a lot.
100%. That would be like my go-to game other than FIFA.
Yeah. Now I don't really play many other games. I used to play a lot more, but yeah, I just enjoy Call of Duty because it's always changing. It's different. It's fun. You play online. Me and Linton, we just talk shit the whole time we're on the mics, and we don't play for serious. We're not very good. We sometimes play with Martin Nguyen, but he's too good for us. So we get a bit shy. We play on our own.
Just playing for those DEFCONs.
Yeah, bruv, he's sick. Martin's really good. Like, he'll headshot people out, jumping out of the sky. I'm like, damn, I can't even shoot someone in the same room as me.
Man, I am the exact same. I'm absolutely terrible. So, obviously, you traveled to a whole lot of gyms. Like, you went over to Liverpool. You're now in Florida at Sanford. What was the reason? What, did you just feel like the training in Australia wasn't enough? Or what was the reason for going to these different gyms?
Once again, it goes back to, like I said, like, I love to travel, man. So I love martial arts. I love to train and I love to travel. So I sort of put them all in together. But yeah, the one of the big, and then once I got over there and I seen the levels and experience, I was like, man, I can't be here in Australia. Training, well, not Australia, more Adelaide, where I come from. You know, the scene is very small. And I sort of outgrew it pretty quick with my career and stuff. So, I ventured out and I wanted to travel the world because, my dream is one day to come back to Adelaide, retire and live in Australia. But all the, all the information that I've gathered and all the years of experience and all the people I've met and all the coaches and all the different techniques I've seen, I can bring them back to my city. And, I can hopefully have a massive influence on, a great generation of MMA fighters coming out of, Adelaide, or a beginning of it, because at the moment, there's only one signed professional and that's myself. So, I don't want to be, like I tell everyone back home, I don't want to be the guy forever, man. I want to see one day, five, six other young, hungry, men and women that are fighting and, things like UFC, one championship, Bellator, PFL. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I always sort of compare MMA at the minute as like pre-Conor McGregor, and especially in Ireland, yeah. Pre-Conor McGregor and then after Conor McGregor. Because before him, like you wouldn't even know what MMA was. In Northern Ireland,
100%.
Like everyone was into boxing, they were into football and the rugby. Like we were producing world champion boxers in Northern Ireland, but MMA is just a relatively new thing now.
Yeah, no, definitely, man. I have to agree with you. And I don't think enough people give enough credit to Conor McGregor. Okay, he might make a bit of an ass of himself at times, a bit of a tit, But you do have to give him the credit that. He did bring MMA to the world. He's made it so glamorous, so, spoken about. So, everyone's interested in MMA now. Like, we can't go anywhere in Florida here with us guys. And people don't even know who we are, like, our names. But they'll be like, oh, you guys MMA fighters? We're like, oh, yeah. Oh, I can see your ears, man. Can we get a photo? And you're like, you don't even know what my name is, but I mean, if you want to take a photo, yeah, can I get it? Well, you get a few here and there that will know who you are, especially the bigger name guys. They get it. But yeah, even guys like myself, we'll just be at a shop and some random guy will be like, oh, you an MMA fighter? And they want to, and you think, like 2 years ago, you'd tell people you did MMA and they'd be like, what's that? I haven't heard of MMA. So, you do have to, take your hat off to Conor and say, he's definitely done a lot for the sport. There definitely is a pre-Conor McGregor era and a post-Conor McGregor era, and we're lucky enough to be on that side of it now, so hopefully we can start making the money he makes and everyone will be happy.
That's it, that's the dream, get that yacht money.
Well, hopefully, it'd be cool. I mean, he's making a bit of a fool of himself at the moment, unfortunately, but it'd be cool if Conor was to come out and speak more openly about, fighter pay and really campaign to get the fighters on a good share. That'd leave him, in my mind, in a great position in terms of MMA history because, he's obviously had a decorated career, a bit of a scattered career now. But, why not finish on a high, high note and get a lot of praise? But we'll see what he does.
it's very, very strange. Like, you had, obviously, the Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather. Like you had that whole situation, and now it's the thing. It's like celebrity boxing matches.
Yeah,
you've got Woodley fighting Jake Paul, and now you've got Jake Paul campaigning for fighter pay.
Yeah, I mean that's the weirdest thing, isn't it? You know what I mean? The a guy like Jake Paul who's doing it, and as much as I don't like Jake Paul. I just don't like the idea of what they're doing. Like, people are gonna say to him, "Oh, he's doing his time." But man, when have you ever became the, this, you know, had your second or third fight and you were the main event of a massive card? So he hasn't done his time as a fighter, you know. Like I haven't even main evented a big card, and I've had, you know, nine MMA fights, you know, six boxing fights. You know, I've been at this thing for over 10 years now, and I haven't even main evented a huge card. And you know, people can say, "Oh, you don't sound salty," but it's like that's why. I, in a sense, sometimes I, whatever, I can't be asked watching these silly boxing events. But at the same time, you know what I mean? I like that he speaks out about, you know, the pay. And this, you know, it brings more people into the sport. You know, that's another cool thing. A lot of more fighting. You know, you're seeing so many more promotions, so many more fights. So, hey, man, the more fights on TV, the better for me. I don't care whether they're celebrities, you know, backyard fights. You know, I just want to see, you know, guys, you know, women and men just getting in there and having a scrap. I think it's a great sport.
Of course. No, you're completely right on what you're saying. Because as you were saying, I was saying, well, his last fight, he was, I think, a Mike Tyson undercard. Like he was like the fight under Mike
Yeah,
Tyson, which
that's
itself
what,
is unbelievable.
that's what I'm trying to say. You know, I work, you know, like all, a lot of us have been in this sport for years. We would love to meet Mike, just meet him. Hey, Mike, you know, like be in the same room as him. But this guy, you know, co-main evented on his second, was first or second fight with Mike Tyson. That's why I'm a bit like, I don't know. This is silly in my mind. You know, this is now we're just like, who's got the most money? Who's got the most following? Will become the best fighters in the world, and that's not fair. The best fighters in the world are the best fighters in the world for one reason only, because they're the best fighter. You know.
I was talking about this a few weeks ago on the podcast, and I was talking about like why I thought MMA was doing better than boxing at the minute. And it's like what you said, it's like the best fight the best. Like if you look at the UFC outside of Conor McGregor, outside of that, him just because he's a draw on himself, but it's always they're always fighting the top five. But see in boxing, like you could fight anybody, you really could.
Well, look at boxing. We've been waiting for Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury for how long now? You know what I mean? Like, come on, guys. Like, if it was the best of the best, those two would have fought 2 years ago. You know, and instead we sit here and wait and wait. You know, then you see, got you know, guys like Floyd Mayweather fighting, you know, an older Manny Pacquiao, that a lot of people said. You know, so you don't get to see the pinnacles of fights, and you know, which is disappointing. But you're seeing the UFC, you're seeing, you know, Bellator, you're seeing ONE Championship, you're seeing, you know, PFL. Too bad. Like we tell you what who you're fighting, and if you don't like it, you know, well, it sucks because your money can be a bit shitty, but. We're seeing the best fights, you know, like, you know, some of the fights we're seeing, you know, because I sort of was starting to get off a bit of the UFC. I was a bit like, ah, this is getting, like a couple of years ago, I was getting a bit too much CM Punk and then Brock Lesnar in the ring pushing DC. I was like, this is just getting a
Yeah,
bit,
can I get?
you know, a bit too much for me. You know, it's a bit, I feel like I was swerving away from it. But then they started bringing out all the fights, and they started bringing out Adesanya and Paulo Costa, and you know, these huge fights that you know that you want to watch, and you're like, oh wow, look at that fight, you know, like, and you almost could not watch those, you know, you didn't want to miss them. You know, you're looking at Bellator, they're putting on that the Grand Prix, you know, AJ McKee and Pitbull, what a fight. And you're seeing, you know, just today, I don't know if you've seen it, Phil Davis is fighting Romero. So, you know, just really cool fights on an MMA, and you, almost like I said, you can't miss them. So, yeah, I guess that's one thing. Like you said, it's great to see an MMA because you see the best of the best. But yeah, it'd be cool one day when, like I said, A, the fighters get paid better, and the cross promotions start happening. That'd be really cool.
I think one of the fights that I wanted to see the most, like I was a massive Joe Calzaghe fan, like growing up
Yeah, Jake
watching.
Asa.
Watching boxing, but the fight that everyone wanted to see, I think it was like Roy Jones Jr., wasn't it? And it didn't come to like Roy was like way past it, and that was always the criticism on Joe Calzaghe's career. You didn't fight the best when they're in the prime, but it wasn't his fault.
Yeah, exactly. It's too much politics. Because I'm a big Joe Calzaghe fan too, actually. I love Joe Calzaghe. And yeah, he cops a lot of slack that he didn't fight the best at the right time. But it's a lot of it's politics. A lot of it's, you know, because both parties have to obviously mutually agree. And hey, if we can't get it working, we can't get it working. But you know, you can't say Joe Calzaghe wasn't the best of all time, one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah, I can agree more.
What did you think? I don't know if you've seen it. Was the last Canelo fight against Billy Joe?
Well, I mean, I did see it, but I don't know. It's a hard one with Canelo because, you know, I think Canelo's sick. I really like the way his look. I like his style. I like the way, you know, I love the way, everything about the way he boxes. But I'm just like, man, like he's great, but, you know, I do think, you know, he's a bit of a drug cheat. I have to come out and say I can't hide it because, I mean, this guy doesn't just beat people. He, like, breaks people's bones and faces. I'm thinking, and yeah, he's already been, he did get popped, I think, once or twice, you know, with that whole meat saga. Yeah, you know, like, look what he did to Callum Smith, and you got to think how big Callum Smith is compared to him. And he just absolutely battered the man. And Callum Smith's a really, really good boxer. I've followed Callum Smith for a long time. And I was just like, wow. Like, and then what he did to Billy Joe, you know, like he really didn't hit Billy Joe a lot of, like, I felt Billy Joe was doing better, landing better, like landing a lot more shots. But it was just that one, like, and it just didn't hit him, bro. Like I said, it shattered his face. I'm thinking, in MMA, people elbow, they knee, they kick, they wear 4 ounce gloves and they punch people in the face on the ground. And I've never seen anyone's, well, not never, but very rarely do you see people's faces getting shattered. And this guy's doing it with his hands and his hands alone. And I don't know. I think he's a bit suspect, that guy. That's all, you know. That's just something I'm big on in this sport. You know, drug cheats and that I don't like.
Well, talk to me about it. What does one do? What is the sort of
nothing? You know, that honestly, there's no drug testing protocol whatsoever. They tell you they can test you on the day and stuff. I think on the day and that, but I've never once been blood tested or urine tested. Never. So it was one of my concerns going into fighting for their promotion. I'm not going to lie, because, you know, some guys, you look at them and you think, I don't know about you, bro. You look like you definitely, you know,
juicy.
Piss hot. Yeah, man, you know. So it's a concern. It's a concern because, you know, I've got no problem going in there fighting, you know, for it all. But I'm not going to go in there and fight a man who's, you know, genetically, you know, mutated against me and I've got to fight for my life against him. You know, that's a bit crazy, but yeah.
This is on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. Obviously, I think drug testing is definitely needed. And I think the UFC is doing it right with USADA. But I also think USADA at times is far too harsh. And what I mean by that is, so I'll give you the example. I had a guy on my podcast called Jimmy Wallhead. And basically he took a contaminant. Long story short, he got into the UFC. He lost his first fight, just said he didn't perform. His second fight, he basically failed his drug test with a microdose. He was like, couldn't believe what had happened. So he went to the shop and he bought like 6 or 7 tubs of this protein powder.
Yeah.
And every single one of these protein powders all had a microdose of some chemical in it. And in the papers back home in England, they were writing that he was a cheat. He was all this different stuff. And he basically said to USADA, well, like, I could have bought this supplement over the counter. Like, why would I take it in a protein shake? And he said it was from a reputable English company as well.
Yeah.
And basically he said the hardest thing for him wasn't that, you know, that he failed the drug test and, you know, the response from the UFC. The hardest thing was he was teaching a kid's MMA class and he had to go around all the parents and say, listen, like, that's not my legacy. That's not what I wanted to leave behind.
Yeah. No, definitely. I feel you. And that's the thing why with a lot of people, I don't buy too much into, you know, when someone's called a drug cheat or this and that. You know, I'd rather read into it as much as I can. That's why I don't see it. Oh, I do like Canelo. I do. That's what I'm saying. I like him. But I'm suspect to some things that I've heard about him. That's all. I'm not going to say he's a cheat or he's not a cheat. But I'm going to say, look, man, I've heard some rumors and, you know, until that's cleared up in my mind, like a lot of people saying, oh, George St. Pierre was a cheat. I'm like, well, did he ever get caught? And they're like, well, no, but, you know, he definitely would have cheated. I'm like, well, you can't say that because that's unfair because, you know, I mean, you can't label people as cheats. And it's unfortunate, like your friend, like you said, the guy you had on, that now he's going to be labeled as a cheat. And, you know, it could have been an honest mistake. It truly could have been an honest mistake. And you know, it's a tough one because it's such a grey area, you know what I mean? And what was his punishment?
Oh, I want to say that it was maybe a year, but this is where it got, see, after he tested, that was him. He was just like, I want to retire from the sport. It was a complete and utter sickness for him. That's what he said. Yeah, so he told the UFC, like, I want to be done. I think USADA gave him a few months off his punishment. But as soon as his sentence was over, he went over to Bellator. He says, like, to be honest, he felt bad about it because it sort of looked like he used it as a way to get out of the UFC, but it wasn't the case at all. It's just at that time in his life, he said it was just really, really dark.
Yeah. Well, now I can imagine, you know what I mean? And, you know what I mean? You know, I'm sure he'll be better for it. But, I mean, that's interesting that he bought six other tubs and they still tested, you know, positive. I mean, the question is, who holds these, you know, supplement companies accountable? You know, they're ruining people's careers, and is anyone holding these people accountable?
Yeah, well, that's it. I think it all comes down to as well as like fight or pay. You know, it comes down to that.
I know you said in what respect do you mean by that? In what respect?
Because if you say, for example, you're fighting for the UFC and you're getting paid $15,000 to show, $15,000 to win. And after that, you test positive, and it wasn't your fault. And you're going into a legal battle with a multi-million-pound corporation.
Yeah, no, that's what I thought you were getting at, and that's what I mean. Even your friend, he's probably purchasing, you know, the best protein that he can afford. I'm sure if he was on the Canelo money, he would have first he'd grab it. All right, someone test that, you know, have this tested for me, pay someone, get it all tested. Now it's all clean, good. All right, bring it in, let's go. But we can't afford to do that. And, you know what I mean? I can't afford to pay people to test my supplements before I take them to make sure I don't get caught. Like, we're just going to take what we can get our hands on, you know what I mean? And, you know, unfortunately, some guys are on less money than other guys. So, you know, I mean, it's such a gray area because, you know, you could honestly be like, man, I'm not a cheat. I just bought something that I could afford. And, you know, obviously it wasn't as good as I thought it was. I don't have all the time in the world to test it, research it. You know, obviously the bits and pieces that it's going to take. So, yeah, it's a sucky situation for the guy. So, you know, I hope that nothing but the best for him.
Well, he's retired now and he's opened up his own gym. He would be part of Dan Hardy's gym. So Hardy Wallhead, I think it's called.
Oh, nice.
So that's what he said now. So it's all worked out. It's all worked out fine, but just on what you were saying there. But see, even after that, that supplement tested positive, he then had to pay USADA to test that for him. You know, it wasn't just USADA took it; he had to pay USADA. It's mad.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a lot of work, a lot of effort, and people don't, you know, obviously see what goes into it for us guys. You know, I mean, they think it's just straightforward, and it's, you know, it's just straight up. Oh yeah, just take your supplement; it's good to go. It's not, man. It's an expensive sport. And yeah, we don't get paid very well at all.
Yeah, I think fighter pay is definitely going to increase. Well, I believe it's going to increase. The reason for that is I think a lot more people are going mainstream.
You there?
Yes, sorry, man. I think I lost you. So I was saying was I feel like fighter pay is going to get better. I feel like it's going to be a slow process, but I think there's so many guys at the minute in the UFC who are transitioning over to that mainstream where they're becoming household names. I think Adesanya is probably the big one, like at the minute where he's breaking out. John Jones, DC, you know, they're all Francis. Like Francis is in the Fast and Furious movies now.
Is he?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's, you know, awesome. You know what I mean? This is what I want to hear. I want to see more and more guys, you know. You know what I mean? The thing is, it's, people like, I think what they think is that we all want that Conor McGregor money. It's like, we don't all want to need that Conor McGregor money. It'd be great. But at the end of the day, we just want what we're worth. Well, let me talk on my own behalf. I just want what I'm worth. You know what I mean? I just want to be paid to be comfortable that I can, you know, I can buy all my right nutrition. I can buy all my right supplements. I got a nice place to live. I got a car. You know what I mean? Like a lot of fighters here, man. You know, like for instance, I'm living over here. I'm living in a house with three other guys, and you know, I got to catch a ride with them because you know I can't afford to, you know, come out here and just hire any old car, you know, any old house I want. because we haven't got that sort of money. So it's disappointing in that sense. But hey, we knew what we were in for when we signed up, and you know I'm not gonna sit all day and cry about it. But hey, it would be better if we could get better pay.
Of course. What ways it work with one in terms of sponsors? Like, can you, when you fight on one and after, could you have like your shirt covered in sponsors or?
Yeah. They still allow all that sort of stuff. They allow sponsors, and which is good because that's a huge thing. That was one thing that really annoyed me about the UFC when they did that. I thought that was a bit rough on on the fighters, because you know, from a lot of reports, a lot of fighters are making, you know, good money from doing that, and now they've had a lot of their money stripped away from them.
I don't know if you could talk about this, but I think in the UFC, it depends who you are, really, when you're wearing like the Venom gear or the Reebok, but I don't think it was a massive amount of money. I think you're maybe talking like £1,000. I don't think it was.
It's very small pay. It's what they get for their for wearing the Venom or not is small. I read it once. I actually, because one thing I've got to say, but I don't like when people, you know, want to badger a typical, like the Venom deal, for instance. Oh, that's stupid. Why are they there for? They're idiots. And it's like, well, what's the solution? What's the solution? You know, I don't sign a Venom or a Reebok. Yeah, but then the UFC going to miss out on a lot of money. So we need to they're not going to do that. So let's find the better solution. I think it would have been cool if Venom came in after Reebok and said, look, these are the shorts. And this is where you're allowed to put your logos. You know what I mean? We have to approve all the logos. And, you know, we'll print them out and send them to you. They'll be there fight day ready for you. That way everybody wins. Like, where Venom's still all over the UFC. Your brands are all over your equipment. The fighters can make excellent pay. And Venom can even, you know, turn around and say, what about we'll only give you $1,000 a fight to wear Venom, and then you can make the rest off your own sponsorships. I think that would have been an awesome thing if Venom came out and did that.
Yeah, I think that's a real good idea.
Yeah, because Venom really just want the notoriety of being in the UFC, and they're going to have it with all their tracksuits, all their shoes, all their bags. But hey, we'll do the fighters the favor, and we'll give you the positions, the measurements, and you put your logos where you got to put them. Like I said, as long as we approve them all, yeah. Like, and I feel like everybody wins. That the UFC wins, Venom wins, and the fighters win. I think that was, you know, a good idea, and you know what I mean. I wish they did something like that.
I like back watching the UFC before those deals. Like, it was cool seeing all like the guys come out in their own gear, and it was all customized the way you want it. And you could tell who it was. Like when Chuck Liddell used to come out, you knew just straight away by looking at the clothes. You're like, that is the Iceman.
I've got to say, there's nothing like an old fight coming up, and it was like, oh, I remember the shorts now. They look so cool, the T-shirts and the shorts, and, you know, it's sort of like you miss it. I mean, the whole uniform, it does look good, you know, with the uniforms and stuff, but nothing beats them. Yeah, like you said, everyone had their own personalities, their own, you know, shorts, T-shirts. So they used to come out, and I used to love it. I think it was cool.
I think there was a lot of cool ones. Like, wasn't it George St. Pierre used to come out in, like, the gi and... Like the headband.
Yeah, he used to come out in the gear. Yeah, he used to come out with the gear on. That was cool. You know, so it was good because that made everyone an individual. But now, you know, with stuff like that, that's when we start, you know, grouping everyone together. You know, I think, but that's the UFC. That's their model, isn't it? Like, that I feel like they want it to be the UFC. You know what I mean? Like, you fight the UFC. Like, this is what you are, UFC. You know, you are not an individual anymore. You are not, you know, Conor McGregor, you are UFC, you know what I mean? Like, you're the UFC fighter. So I think that's obviously their model, and they're trying to, it's good, it's working for them. You know, they're one of the strongest brands for a reason. But as a fan and as a fighter, you know, I want to see personalities. Like, as much as Conor McGregor can be a tit at times, I think he's awesome. I love watching him. He's funny. He's, you know, at the moment, he's a bit too much. I'm not going to lie. Like, he's a bit,
quite dark.
The stuff he's doing. Yeah, I think he's, you know, I mean, I don't know his situation. I don't know him at all whatsoever. But, I mean, clearly from the things he's saying, he's in a bad place, man. And you know what I mean? Because you got to remember, a person like him with all that money and all that fame, he's, he's probably got no one around him that's truly got the best for him anymore. They're just people that are just there for his paychecks. And, you know, so that's sad to see that where he's heading. But, yeah, but like, back to my point, like him, Adesanya, you know, they're great personalities. Like, I love watching them and hearing them talk and the things they do. And I think they're funny, you know what I mean? That's one thing I don't want to see go away from MMA is personalities.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been a lot of great personalities coming out. Like, it's even recently with the last fights, you have like good lines where it was, I think it's like Chandler versus Gaethje, and Gaethje saying, you know, I'd love to punch you in the face. He's like, you know, I'd like that too. You know,
this is yeah. I mean, you as probably a fan, you love the fights. You're like me. We just want to watch the fights and watch them. But you know, I bet you agree with this. Most of the casual fans, all of them, they say, oh, I love the embeddeds. I love the build-ups, you know, because you get to know the person as a fighter, you know, the personality. And every fighter's got a cool story. Every fighter's got a good background. They've all got cool – a lot of them have great personalities. They're funny. So that's what that's why I think those embeddeds are great, because you get to see, you know, the fighters, not just for fighting, but you get to see them as who they are. And, you know, hopefully, like we were saying before, they can build their brands and then build their own wealth off themselves.
Yeah, I'll be real. Like, the reason why I started this podcast was because I was listening to like all these other podcasts. And I was hearing all these stories. And I was like, that's amazing. You know, like, I'm hearing these guys' stories. Yeah. And I was like, why can't I do that? You know, why can't I start a podcast and hear these stories for myself and ask the questions that I want to ask?
100%, man. I got to say, you know, I think that's why fighters have good personalities. They're pretty chill people because like I said, a lot of times when I talk to a lot of the fighters, to say there's not one fighter out here that, or a fighter I've ever met who comes from, you know, a wealthy background. You know, mom and dad had, you know, a big fancy house with a big, you know, they got cars, and you know, no fighters come from that background. It's all people from, you know, working class, you know, just people who got their nose to the grindstone and just working out every day and just making the dream work. You know, they really are. They're just pushing. You know, you hear guys work construction, they work security, they work odds and end jobs here and there just to, you know, just to fuel their dream. And like I said, that's what makes all of us, you know, pretty chilled out guys, because, you know, we've been to the bottom. And, you know, I guess hopefully the only way is up.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I would definitely agree with that. There's so much, like, the people that I've talked to, like, all the stories have been absolutely amazing. You know, going from start to finish and hearing just about their life and how they started. Like, for example, Alan's coach Rodney. Like, when Rodney started training MMA, there was nobody else to follow. It was just him.
Yeah.
So see, for Northern Ireland, he is the pioneer. Like, he was that pre-Conor McGregor era. He was pre.
Yeah, that's the thing as well. MMA is such a new sport that you guys, like you have met, like you said, Rodney, he's essentially like your Royce Gracie, you know, of your city, of your country, you know. And, you know, in many years to come, that name will be, oh, I remember that name. I've heard of that guy, you know what I mean? So you were lucky enough, and, you know, I've met him as well, to have met the guy, you know what I mean? But you got to remember, MMA is so fresh, so new of a sport that, yeah, you're able to still get so close to fighters. Maybe in many years to come, fighters will be, you know, hopefully they'll be on millions of dollars, and they'll be very hard to, you know, because it's cool. We can do podcasts like this. How many NFL, how many NBA, how many, you know, high-level soccer players you see jumping on a podcast and just talking about their day-to-day life and their day-to-day, you know, doings? They're all, you know, no, they're too good to do stuff like this now. They're too wealthy, you know?
Well, that's talk about that a wee bit. So, every MMA fighter sort of promotes themselves, like, When you sign up for that life, you become your own brand.
Yeah.
And when you think about footballers or rugby players or whoever, it's like they're tied down by so much legal stuff that they can't say very much without getting into trouble.
Yeah.
And then Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to just say, that's my point about personalities in MMA. You get the personalities because everyone's still an individual. Where, like you're saying, rugby players, soccer players, you're so within a group, you're so within an organization, you can't just be you anymore. You've got to do what everyone else is doing. Otherwise, you're going to get, you know, ostracized. And, most likely kicked out of the team, you're going to lose your millions and millions of dollars. So you just sort of got to shut up and toe the line. And oh, I don't like that about MMA. I don't like that about, you know, where the world heads in that direction. That's why, once again, like I said, I love fighting, because, you know, fighters, they're all individuals. Even boxers, you see them, you know, they're fancy cars, they're, you know, crazy outfits, they're insane entrances. You know, they're individuals, they're entertainers, they do what they want when they want. So that's something I like. That's why I like the combat sport so much.
Yeah, I think it's also that people expect you as fighters to say what you want or how you're feeling. They just expect realness. And yeah, with a lot of other sports, it's not really there. You know, you don't know the individual. You hear, just pick any football match that you've ever watched in your entire life and you listen to after the game, it's always the same generic response.
Well, it's the same generic response before and after the game. Oh, we feel great. We should do good tonight. They get beat by 10 goals. Oh, it was a rough night in the office. You have those, you know, it's just like, come on, man. Wanted to come in, but look, we were useless today. We honestly were shit. I don't know what happened out there. We were just terrible, not good enough. That's all I got to say. You know what I mean? Like, you don't hear that anymore. You know, everyone's just giving out the same, churning out the same information. And it's just like, that's one thing why I got off of ball sports, because it's just, it's repetitive. There's no more. Another thing is too, there's no more pride in I feel in ball sports. You know, you don't really see that much anymore. That's a big thing as well. That's why I feel like the honesty goes away, because how many players play for a team they actually even support? Probably most of the players, you know, growing up, they like, you know, how many people do you think were Man City fans ended up getting, you know, picked up by Man United? You know, back in the day, you know, that probably wouldn't have happened because you would have stuck with your own team, but.
Yeah,
you know, people just you know, want to go for the dollar signs, and so you just do as you're told. You're like, yeah, whatever, I'll go for Manchester United. You know, now I'll tell everyone they're the best. Yeah, I guess so. We're fighters, you know, we do what we want when we want on our terms. So, you know, that's why, like, once I'll just keep on saying it, that's why I love watching you know, combat sports.
When you're over in Liverpool, did you get a chance to go to any of the games?
Yeah, I went to one game. I went to it was only a Europa game. I went to Ruben Kazan. I watched a few games in England. I watched Tottenham play against West Ham, because I sort of didn't mind Tottenham. Then I watched them at Everton as well. I watched them away, and then I've seen a few games in Italy as well. So, I mean, I don't mind the ball sports for the spectacles. I think the Europeans, you guys, are the best in the world. You know, atmosphere, especially the English and the Irish, and you guys know how to party, let me say that.
Isn't the atmosphere weird, like, when you go to one of those games, like, it's different?
Oh, like, where I come from, you go and watch a football game, everyone sits down, you know, people are eating, talking during the game, and you sit amongst other fans, which is cool. Like, honestly, it's good that you can go and relax and watch. Where about, nothing beats the Europeans. You go to a game and they're going crazy. They're chanting, they're screaming, they're, you know, tearing the place apart. To me, once again, back to that, I said it before, passion. I love seeing the passion. You know what I mean? That's why I feel, especially like football and most sports now, ball sports, there's just no more passion anymore. Like I said, how many guys are like Steven Gerrard, where you stick with your own club all the way to the end, and, you know, you get offered bigger deals, but you say, no, I want to stick with my home team. That's passion. That's pride. That's something that I tune in to watch. I'm over watching millionaires kick around a soccer ball, you know what I mean?
I'm glad you said Steven Gerrard, because that is like my all-time footballing hero.
Well, I know him well, because obviously I lived in Liverpool, so I know of him. Yeah, a lot about him, but yeah, I don't really know many other, like Totti, Francesco Totti, he was another one. Like, my friends, they love soccer, so they always tell me about it. But Francesco Totti was another one who, you know, stuck with his team, stuck with his hometown. But, you know, I'm saying, like, you'll see a guy of this era, like a Steven Gerrard, who comes from Liverpool, for instance, you know, and he will play and then he'll kick a few goals, and the local rival team, who they hate, he's hated his whole life, he'll just sign with them for the money, I think. You know, people are like, oh, yeah, but he's got to look after his friends and his family. But I'm like, what's a million dollars between your friends? You know what I mean? Like, I'd rather stay with my hometown and win my titles with my team. You know, it's different. I get it. If Gerrard was on playing for Liverpool for 100 grand and someone offered him, you know, $10 million, of course you're going to change. I get that. It's a, you know, it's a massive lucrative deal. But, you know, when it's from 9 million to 10 million, what's the fucking difference? So I keep your million. I'll stay home with my, you know, my people.
Yeah, I remember this is going back a number of years ago. I don't know if you were living in Liverpool for this stage, but it was Chelsea came in for Liverpool, or came in for Steven Gerrard from Liverpool. And it looked from the outside like Steven Gerrard was going to sign for Chelsea. And the fans flooded the streets. The fans were at the ground. Yeah. They were near his house. They were crying. They were burning his tops. Yeah. Like, it was just the whole city just...
I heard they did that with Totti when Ryan, I think Roma they were gonna, or he was gonna leave Rome to go to, I think Real Madrid. My friends are telling me, and they reckon the fans blocked off all the streets, blocked off the airport. They wouldn't let him leave, and I was like, see, that's passion, man. Like, that's cool to see, man. Like, I mean, if I'm a player and they're doing that to me, I'm thinking I ain't leaving the city, man. Like, this is where, you know, this is where these people love me. Like, they adore me. Why would you want to leave? Like, money can't buy that, you know. That's crazy.
It's weird. He's, like, Steven Gerrard's so well-respected. And you just have to look at his entire attitude towards things. Like, because I would follow him at Liverpool my entire life. And you got to the very last game that he ever played for Liverpool where, you know, he and the coaches decided that he was no longer wanted to play that level. He wanted to go over to America and play for LA Galaxy. And someone tried to get him to sign an LA Galaxy top on his last game for Liverpool. And he says, I will not sign that top until I am living in America.
Yeah, see, like, stuff like that, you know what I mean? I've got nothing but respect for people like that because, you know, as much as I'm not a ball sport fan, you know what I mean? But I've always liked Steven Gerrard because of the fact that, you know, he's a loyal guy to his team, to Liverpool, to where it comes from. And I like I said, I've always sort of liked him, and I knew he was always must have been such an amazing player because when I went to Liverpool, he was retired, and I'm at the game and they're singing about him. I'm thinking, why are they singing about him? He's retired, so I found that quite funny, but that was cool. You know, I mean, like to think that, you know, you retired, finished, and the fans still love you, still don't, you know, still sing about you. And so I thought, wow, this guy. So I watched the documentary on him, and that's when I really found out, like, he was as great as I thought he was, and well done to him.
Yeah, what it all comes down to is, like, he stayed at Liverpool through a very, very dark time. You know, Liverpool, long story short, I don't know if you know about this, they nearly went bankrupt because they had American owners in there. So basically, Liverpool had Liverpool were getting bought over, and they were going to get bought over by I think it was an Arab family who had a lot of oil money, or an American businessman. So the American businessmen bought Liverpool over, but they didn't have any money themselves. So what they did was that they borrowed a whole lot of money off the bank. And as soon as Liverpool obviously didn't know this, they borrowed all this money, hundreds of millions. And as soon as they got the deal signed, they then loaded all the money onto the club. So it was no longer their debt. It was Liverpool's debt.
Oh, no.
And Liverpool, like, there was talk of Liverpool folding, ceasing to become a club, going down the leagues. And Steven Gerrard was there for all that. He stayed.
Yeah.
They won a Champions League in 2005. And, like, I was like, to be the best team in Europe with a squad that wasn't that great.
Yeah. Oh, that's all. Yeah, you know, that's awesome. That's another reason why when I moved out to Liverpool, you know, I loved it out there in the city too because the passion of the people there, I made a lot of good friends. I met a lot of good people out there. And, yeah, the passion, the pride that those people had, and I just thought they were cool people. And then I seen the team and the city, and I really like related to it. And I stayed there for about 5.5-6 months, and I really like the city of Liverpool, and I made a lot of good friends, and lifelong friends. So
that's one of the things I love hearing about MMA fighters. Like, again, referring back to, like, talking to Rodney at the end of the podcast, he was talking about traveling and seeing so many different countries. And he says at the very end of it, like, you know, I have so many different friends in different countries that I always have a place to stay. And it's just like, MMA fighters know everybody. It's like such a small, tight-knit community. Like, eventually you bump into somebody.
Would you say that again? They cut out.
So it'll be like MMA is like such a small community of people, and like once you make a friend in a gym, you know that's a friend for life.
Well, I mean, look at me and Alan. I mean, Alan are a great example of that. We met, you know, on the other side of the world in England, and many he came from Northern Ireland, I came from Australia. We met once, we trained a few times, and you know, now we're lifelong, you know, friends. You know what I mean? Like he's come to Adelaide a few times and stayed with me. I've gone to Sydney a few times, stayed with him. He's a you know, a very good friend of mine now, and someone that I respect, and you know what I mean, and that all comes from just training together. That's all we did, you know. So I've got friends as well all over the world that I've met in Greece, all over America, all over Europe, all over Australia, that, you know, that just through MMA, you know, through, I met him in Thailand, I met him in, you know, different countries, and yeah, we've always stayed connected and supported one another. So yeah, it's a pretty cool community. But once again, I think because we're all down to earth people, we all come from similar sort of walks of life. Like I said before, you know, we've, none of us have come from the rich mum and dad background. We've all come from, you know, grinding to get where we are today. And then, you know, I guess we can all respect one another for that.
So did you train over in Thailand?
Yeah, I've trained in Thailand 4 times.
Tiger Muay Thai?
Nah, Phuket Top Team.
So I would know, I've known them because of the podcast and stuff, and I've had like brief conversations. So like, I don't know if you know him, like John Hutchinson, who's the boxing coach over at Tiger Muay Thai. You'd be Peter Yan's coach.
No, maybe if I've seen him, but no, anyway.
But like, he's another one, real, real good guy, and very similar story. Like, so he was over boxing, like that was where, what he came from. He was a boxer. He fought in Australia, fought in Asia. He won titles, and he just went over to Tiger Muay Thai just to see what it was, you know, to see what it was about, just as like a holiday. And he ended up holding pads for a couple of guys. They started calling him coach, and he just ended up there.
Oh, nice, good on him. Well, that's what's cool about it, you know what I mean, as well with MMA. You know, you can grow and you can have some great experiences and see some cool things all around, all over the world, you know, just from, you know, risking a little bit and going out there and extending yourself. And I mean, look at him, like you said, he went on a bit of a holiday and went over there, held some pads. The next thing you know, he's probably having a great life, isn't he? You know, traveling all over the world and training with, you know, some of the best guys in the world and seeing some pretty cool things.
Yeah, I think my favorite moment of that entire podcast was he was telling me about a video, and it was like, Peter Yan, it was against Aldo, and Yan went down and stopped him in the 5th round. But in the 4th round, so John is a guy from Northern Ireland. So obviously you've talked to Alan. It's like, and you're now talking to myself. It's like that strong accent.
Yeah,
it can be like quite hard to pick up sometimes. And he's talking to Peter, and he's saying to him, "This is for your family. Look to your left. There's your family." Yeah. And it was just like this switch went, and Yan went down and stopped him. And he's just like, that was everything. It was just family, the motivation of family.
Yeah. I mean, that's the biggest thing, you know. I mean, you know, that's like I was saying before, like, we don't want millions. We just want what we're worth. But at the end of the day, like, we're still going to do this. You know, the unfortunate thing is we get ripped off because we just love doing this, you know. We just want to be in here. We just want to, you know, prove to the world, prove to our family, prove to our friends, you know, that all the sacrifices, everything they've done to help us get where we are today, you know, is all a part of it, you know, and we just want to, you know, hopefully one day give back to them what they've given to us, you know, so much of, you know, so, you know, hopefully, you know, we can do that in the future. But yeah, you know, I mean, it would help if we got good pay too, because, you know, then we could, you know, right now, if I was paid well, I'd bring my girlfriend over here and, you know, we'd get a nice little place together. And, but, you know, unfortunately we can't do that sort of stuff because, you know, we're limited.
That's coming, I believe. It's coming.
Yeah.
So I want to talk to you about your last fight. You're fighting a legend, a world champion. You won decision. I think it was in the 1st round. You had him a really good left hook and dropped him.
Yeah, in the second.
Right, second.
Yeah. Right at the start.
And it was a good fight. And then I think afterwards the talk was the name of Eddie Alvarez.
Yeah.
Is that the fight you're still campaigning for? Is that the fight that you want?
Of course, man. I mean, now it's gone past the point of Eddie Alvarez, it's more of, I just want to fight. You know what I mean? I want to get back in there. I'm 30 years old. I want to get active. I want to do what I love doing. I want to get in there. So, hey, if it's Eddie, even better. But, yeah, I'd love to fight a guy like Eddie Alvarez. To me, he was another one. Him, like I was saying before about the Nate Marquardt fight, watching that as a young guy. But watching, you know, Eddie Alvarez and Michael Chandler on Bellator, because we used to get a couple of fights every night at midnight on a certain channel that only played two or three fights from Bellator. And I remember one night, I remember staying up and I watched Michael Chandler and Eddie Alvarez fight each other. And I was just like, wow, man, like MMA is so, like that. From that day, I was like, MMA is sick. You know, it's a really, really good sport. I love it. I would love to do it more. And yeah, so when I seen the opportunity to potentially fight, you know, a guy that sort of got me into the game, I was like, oh, I'd love to do that. You know what I mean? Love to, you know, put a big name on my resume. So, you know, that's why I pushed for that fight. But hey, at this point in time, I don't really care. I just want to fight again. You know, I just want to get out there and get active.
Have you had any contact with Eddie's team?
No. I mean, we're obviously more with MMA. You just go more through your, obviously through the promotions itself. But no, we made a campaign. We made a, you know, we had a few posters made up by my friend Lalo Designs. He made us some cool posters to sort of campaign, hopefully push it over the line. But no, we never ended up really hearing anything about it. But that is what it is. I'm just going to keep on training, and when they give me a name and a date, and then I'll just get out and do my job.
Mm-hmm. And then how many fights have you got left on your one contract?
I think I've got four left, I think, on the contract. But yeah, I'm not too sure if there's also, if my contract's coming to an end also, I think. So who knows what's going to happen in the next coming months. But yeah, that's why I'm out here in America at Sanford and training and keeping myself ready. So when that next thing does come, I'm ready for it. You know, I don't want to be sitting, you know, my hands going, oh, you know, I should have been in America. I should have done this, should have done that. You know, these are things that I can actively change. So that's why I made the trip out here and to do what I got to, you know, to do my thing.
How are you finding Sanford?
Oh, yeah. Like, honestly, it's the best, you know, honestly, the best gym in the world that I've trained at and been associated with. And it's not only because of the facilities. It's not only because of the fighters. It's not only because of, you know, like what we've got down there, but it's mainly because of the, you know, the sort of, it's a bit of a brotherhood which we have out here with all the boys. We all become very close. You know what I mean? I talk about it with sometimes with some of the boys that, because a lot of us obviously come over here alone or with, you know, maybe a girlfriend or a wife. But a lot of us come out of here with no friends, no family, you know, obviously located in Florida. And yeah, so we have to become each other's friends and family. And yeah, I think we do a really good job of that at Sanford MMA. The coaches are, you know, a big honor, making us, you know, as you know, a close group that works together and wants to progress together, become, you know, not only the best fighters in the world, but the best team in the world.
I think that's so important. Like, when you think of MMA, you think of individuals, but behind the scenes, you've got a team, you've got sparring partners, you've got coaches, you've physios, you've strength and conditioning.
Well, that's one thing that's cool about Sanford, is where they're doing something that no one in the world's ever done before, you know, so they're going to do, you know, they're doing something that's unheard of, you know, really is, you know, where else in the world, you know, besides ATT, you know, who else is doing things like that? So it's cool to see, you know, big organization, gyms grouping up, and, you know, hopefully it'll be the future of MMA.
It's good as well, because I'm sure that the level of sparring partners that you've had is increased, because there are so many top guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the biggest thing why you come out here too. Initially, you know, what brought me over was the bodies, was the work with the coaches. That's why I come out here, because obviously the coaches have wealth of knowledge. You know, Henry, Cammy, Greg, you know, Stroud. There's so many good coaches in there that we work with, you know. So that is a good thing. But then when you're walking into a sparring room of, you know, 30 to 40 people, you know, and in that 30 to 40, you know, I'm, you know, considered a, you know, lightweight, welterweight, you know, you've got, you know, 10 or 15 of the best guys in the world in those weight divisions in there. So, You know, I mean, you go on the spar, it's, you know, you're in there for a real, you know, real fight. You know, it's not, you know, like where I spar back in Australia, like sometimes, you know, I'm going to have 2-3 different opponents just for one round. Here, sometimes you're like, man, I don't, you know, when they say, one more round, you're like, oh, man, not another round. I don't need another round. I'm dying. So yeah, that's definitely the, you know, the biggest and the best part about it because, yeah, you got, you get straight, you know, you get the best guys in the world and you're working with them, you're being pushed to be the best. And, you know, they say you can only get as good as the guy next to you. So, you know, if the guy next to you is an animal, you know, hopefully it's going to create a, you know, just a, you know, a team of animals.
I think there's something special to be said about a group of like-minded individuals all in the same room together and all pushing for the same thing, all pushing for the same dream. And I think people get it twisted as well. You know, people talk about the UFC and they think that's the only place where good fighters live. You know, that's where all the best are.
Yeah.
But there's fantastic fighters all over the world in different promotions.
Yep. Yeah, I think more and more people are starting to wake up to that. But, you know, many of the casual fans, which make up the majority of the fans of MMA, they don't know that yet. But, you know, the right promoter, that's up to the other organizations such as, you know, One Championship and Bellator and PFL, they, you know, promote better and push the brand out there better. You know, the UFC is, you know, the biggest and the best, so you got to chase them. So it's sort of on their half to do that. But yeah, there's some great fighters all over the world and all sorts of organizations.
I have to ask you about this, obviously, because you train with them. How do you see the Michael Chandler fight playing out?
I don't know. You're talking about Gaethje Chandler?
Yeah.
Oh, I think that's going to be a great fight. Seriously, that's a fight where you're like, as a fan, you're like, oh, man, that's a cool fight. I want to see that. I think that'll be a really, really good fight. I'm interested to see that. It's hard to pick a winner, man, because they're both going to, you know, I think it's going to obviously come down to just a striking battle, isn't it? It's who's going to have the better hands. And Chandler's got dynamite in his hands, but so does Gaethje. So, you know what I mean? It's going to be an even battle, you know what I mean? I mean, Gaethje's last fight was, he fought, what, October?
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
Khabib. And then, you know, Chandler's fought twice. So who knows? You know what I mean? We'll have to wait and see, I guess.
I fought with the Chandler fight versus Oliveira. Like, that could have went either way. It was very, very close. But that's just the nature of the game.
Exactly. That's the nature of life, is it? Oh, sorry. Oops. Sorry, you there?
Yeah, I'm there.
Yeah, sorry. But that's the nature of life, is it not? You know what I mean? You go out there, you do your best. Sometimes it pays off, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, I think that's what made that fight so exciting. It's because both guys were pressing forward and it was just a good fight.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's Michael Chandler, isn't it? That's what I'm saying. That's why, how good's Gaethje Chandler going to be? Because, I mean, have you ever seen Justin Gaethje take a backward step? No, have you ever seen Michael Chandler take a backward step? No. So who's gonna go down first? I don't think it's gonna go many more than two rounds, but yeah, it's gonna be a good fight.
I think Gaethje's striking's definitely improved in the sense of, you know, he's not taking, he still takes quite a lot of damage, but he doesn't take anywhere near as much as the Gaethje from, say, maybe six fights ago.
Oh no, actually was his last fight Gaethje or Ferguson?
Oh
no, sorry. Khabib or Ferguson, sorry.
Because
in that Ferguson fight, he was awesome, man. He was awesome to watch. So I thought he, you know what I mean. If he brings that to the table, who knows? He's gonna wait and see.
I'm actually googling now because I think you're right. Let me see.
Yeah, because I just thought of that. I was like, yeah, pretty. I was thinking, did he get the title shot off of Ferguson or did he have that after?
I'm thinking it could have been after, because Ferguson was coming off a loss. Am I right in saying that? No, you're right. No, it was Khabib.
Yeah, it was Khabib was the last one.
It was Khabib, and then he knocked out Tony Ferguson. And then before that was Cerrone, maybe? No, I don't know if that's right.
I don't know. But I like Justin Gaethje. He's a good fighter, but I'm also a big, big fan of Michael Chandler, so. Yeah, it'd be cool to see that fight. Sort of excited to see.
So I think if this is correct, it was he lost two on the bounce, and it was Eddie Alvarez and Poirier.
Yeah.
And then he fought James Vick, knocked him out, fought Barbosa, knocked him out, fought Donald Cerrone, TKO'd him, Tony Ferguson, beat him,
yeah,
and then Khabib.
Yeah. Okay, okay.
But just on that, like one I've brought over a lot of guys. Like I thought Demetrius Johnson was a great move.
Yeah. Yeah. I said it. I really like that they brought Demetrius. Of all people to bring him, I think it was a great move.
And one of the last things, I'm going to let you go on this. What is the Spartan mentality? What is it?
Man, it's just this hard work, dedication, you know what I mean? Like, in life, I was never sort of, honestly, man, I was, you know, I know a lot of people say this, but, you know, I was never really good at much, man. I was never the fastest, the strongest in my class. I was never the smartest, but, you know, there's one thing that, you know, even in the gym here, man, I come in and there's a lot of things that, you know, a lot of guys are better than me at. But, you know, there's one thing that I'm definitely going to do, man. I'm going to show up and I'm just going to work, man. I'm going to give it everything I've got. I'm going to try my hardest. You know, there's something in me that, you know, just sometimes I don't want to quit, man. You know, I you know what I mean? There's just, quitting is not an option, I think, you know what I mean, for me. And you know, I'd rather, you know, be knocked out than, you know, quitting. So, that's the way it is to me, man. Like, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. And, you know, unfortunately, the best day sometimes, you know, and I honestly bring it back to one of my best fights, you know, that I, you know what I mean? Probably not my best, but one of the ones that I always remember was my first loss, man. Like, to go in there and stand toe-to-toe with a man that, you know, honestly, like, on the day, man, I was, that was me at like 40%. And, you know, I'll be honest, bro, I got the shit kicked out of me. But it was a fight that I'll never forget, because I remember getting up for that third round, you know, looking across the cage and thinking, you know, I can't even lift my hands up. I'm so tired. I'm so depleted. But there's just no way in hell I'm going to quit, man. So that's where the Spartan mentality, the name comes from. And, you know, I live by it. You know what I mean? That day I made myself proud, and I made myself, you know, to believe that I am a Spartan, and you know what I mean? I fight like one. So, you know, that's the way my mentality is. Even with this whole COVID, you know, most people have been, you know, either stopped or they've been, you know, they've given up trying, you know, because it's too hard, it's too much. Not for me, man. You know what I mean? COVID came about and all I did was get stronger, man, and found out different ways to do things. And, you know, I got myself eventually over to America, back here training where I belong. And, you know, even people were freaking out. You know, you going to America, aren't you scared of COVID? I was like, I don't care, man. Like it says in the name of the Spartan, man, if I'm going to die from, you know, doing what I love, then it's a beautiful day to die. You know what I mean?
That's very, very poetic, poetically put.
But it's, you know, it's the truth, man. If we're not willing to, you know, to die for what we love, then what are we for? What are we living for? What's the point?
I think from what you're saying, you know, like that's what a warrior is. You know, it's live by the sword, die by the sword.
That's it, man. Like I said earlier, sometimes that's life, is it not, man? Sometimes you wake up and you think, what am I doing, man? What's the point? Like, seriously, why don't I just go get a normal job and just be like everybody else? And you go, nah, man, because I'm not normal. I'm a warrior, man. Like, you know, as I said earlier in the podcast, I try to stay away from fighting for a long time. But I think this is me, man. This is what I do. This is what I love. I love martial arts. I love competing. And, yeah, that's where the Spartan mentality comes from.
Yeah, fighting isn't for normal people.
Yeah, 100%, man. Fighting is, it's not a game. I tell everyone, I say, this is not a hobby. Do not get into this for a hobby. Do not get into this for a bit of fitness, a bit of fun. I said, you get into this because you want to be the best and, you know, you want to go to war, man. There's just no other way about it. So, yeah, that's for sure.
What was the difference between, say, the very first time you fought, walking to the cage, and compared to the very last time that you walked to the cage?
Oh, massive. Especially the last one. You know what it was? I think the last fight, I've grown so much over so many years and so many fights and trained with so many guys and, you know, been around so many good people that, you know, if I could say one thing about my last fight, I was present. You know, I was there. I was present in that moment. nothing else in the world mattered, you know, nothing, you know, like, I think a lot of fighters, you know, they get too emotional, everyone's different, but yeah, I feel like we build it up too much. At the end of the day, man, it's just a 9-to-5. You're like, we're just going to go in there, we're both going to beat each other up. Someone, you know, we're both going to get paid and only one of us can win. So, you know, let's find out who the best man is, you know.
Yeah. When you're in the middle of that, like, most people aren't going to understand that the answer that you give, because it's so unique. You know, when you're in a situation like that, that's so high pressure, there's a lot of stress. You know, you move the wrong way, that could be the end of your night. How do you keep the heart rate low?
To be honest, man, I think you've just got to just love that, like, love that feeling. You've got to love the feeling of, you know, I've been listening to Rickson Gracie and he made a good point of it. You know, he goes under, you know, into an ice bath, but he goes head under and has a snorkel on, and he only stays in there, like, you know, underneath the water for, you know, till he can bring his heart rate back down. You know, he loves surfing because he says, you know, surfing's, you know, just like fighting. You know, at any moment you can be gone, you can be dead, you can be finished. You know, a shark, a wave, anything can. And I think it's, you've just got to enjoy that pressure. That, and I think that's why a lot of people succumb to, you know, normal life. They go, you know, just get a normal job, normal, you know, get married, kids and stuff. Which is, hey, don't get me wrong, that's an amazing achievement. But, you know, sometimes when you're under so much pressure, you know, especially like, and there's nothing like fighting, you know what I mean? Like, you know, you've had to, you know, you're walking into a cage to fight another man, potentially to, you know, one of us might not make it out of here today. There really is no better feeling. Like, honestly, there really is. Like, at the moment, I'd be like, nah, man, I don't want to fight. Leave me alone. I just want to sit down and relax. But when you get there on that day, you hear your music, you see the people, you see the lights, you're just like, man, I can't wait for this. This is where I need to be. And I think when you can start to appreciate that, that's when you really just enjoy fighting. You just enjoy this job.
Do you ever just look back at your life and be like, this doesn't even feel real?
Oh, 100, all the time. Even my girlfriend, she's always to me all the time. She's like, who are you? I said, I don't know, man. Like, honestly, because I'm a kid, you know, from a place called Adelaide in Australia that I'm sure you've never heard of. I'm sure most of the people that are going to hear this have never heard of. You know, most of the people I ever meet, they go, oh, where are you from, Sydney or Melbourne? I'm like, no, I'm actually from Adelaide. Oh, where's that? Never heard of that, you know. So, you know, I come from a little, you know, a suburb called Salisbury, where honestly, man, no, like I said, nothing and no one comes out of there. So, you know, for me, I've been all over the world and I've trained with some of the best. Like I was saying here before, you know, watch a guy like Nate Marquardt as a kid. Now I got to, you know, stand next to him and train with him, watch him in his, you know, his comeback fight and, you know, train along guys like we were talking before, Michael Chandler and, you know, guys like Kamaru Usman and, you know, these guys like Rashad Evans, you know, some people that, you know, in my life, I would have never thought I'd even, you know, meet him. And now I actually get to train with him, spar with him, you know, talk to him, get to know him more than just as a fighter. So, yeah, it's a real man. And, you know, I've done some amazing things in my life. And, you know, I'm only 30, so I can't wait to see what's on the other side of, you know, the next couple of years.
Yeah, that's going to be unreal. And I'm looking forward to tuning into the next fight. And I'll get sharing the link and also people can see it. And I think what you're saying there, like Rashad Evans, like that's a massive name drop for anybody.
Yeah,
like a talented guy, like, Rashad versus Rampage. Like that's tough.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You know, like, you know, to tell you the truth, the first day I walked in the gym at Sanford, you know, back then it was Hard Knocks, and you know, it was a bit of like, oh man, like where am I? You know, I mean, it was a bit of like a fantasy camp, but. You know, now you tune in, you dial in, you realize you're one of those guys. You want to become one of those names one day. You want to be a guy that a young kid's going to walk in the gym and be like, oh, man, I've got the train with Tony Caruso today. How cool is that? So, you know, that you get past that point. But, yeah, I'm not going to lie. The first time, you know what I mean, I walked in that gym. It was surreal, man. But that's why if you roll the dice in life sometimes, man, it works out pretty cool. And like I said before, if you're willing to put yourself in high pressure situations, I'm telling you now, some amazing things can come out of it. Yeah, sometimes you can end pretty badly and you say, oh, what an idiot, what did I do that for? But honestly, like when your body says no, but your heart says yes, you know that you got to go forward. You have to. It's just your own you know, mental side trying to convince you that it's not a good idea. But if your heart's saying it, man, go for it. Just chase those dreams until, you know, until you can't run anymore.
Man, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
I appreciate it, man.
It's been a great podcast.
Thank you for having me on, man. I appreciate it. And I guess I hope you keep – is it cold over there at the moment or are you warm?
That's all right, man. We had a heat wave a couple of weeks ago. Now it's starting to get cold again.
Because I know Northern Ireland's pretty cold all the time. So sort of just say, I'm over here in Florida and we're hot all the time.
Yeah, no, I love Florida. I'll tell you this before you go. So I went over to Kenya and I lived in Kenya for 3 months and I went during their winter.
Yeah.
And like obviously I'm from Northern Ireland, so I turned up like wearing shorts and a t-shirt and they're all wearing like big massive coats, hood up, and they're looking at me as if I'm crazy as I'm running about in shorts.
Yeah.
But like man, it was warm for me.
Yeah, no, I can imagine.
So man, I'll let you go. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Easy, my man. I appreciate it. Thank you for the time and I hopefully we'll talk soon, all right?
Oh, 100%.